About the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net or visit our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/flashpoints. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
Hi, this is Justin Miller, KBOO's Underwriting Coordinator. Every day, local businesses support KBOO through program sponsorship or underwriting. These underwriters are people like you, progressive, diverse, and supporting real radio. So when you hear an underwriter's acknowledgement, consider giving them some of your business and telling them that you heard about them on KBOO. If your business would like to reach out to the area's 55,000 most diverse and progressive listeners, you can learn how at kboo.fm/underwriting, by email to underwriting@kboo.org, or call Justin 503-231-8032. KBOO Underwriting. Your clients are listening.
And welcome to this edition of It Takes a Village. And I'm your host, Shahid Hamid. As we recently demonstrated, as was recently demonstrated in a Chicago, Illinois schoolyard, many of our cities are being held hostage, indeed are under siege by gang violence, known today as gang banging. In spite of laws like Measure 11, gang banging persists. What are the gang members trying to tell us? What can be done to curb gang violence? Today, join me and my host, or my guest, pardon me, Aj Johnson, aka Jay Johnson and Slash Solo, for Confessions of a Former Gangbanger, The Turnaround. We'll begin in just a moment. Welcome, Oz, to It Takes a Village. We're certainly glad to have you here today.
Glad to be here.
Okay, let me make sure that we can hear you. Once again.
Glad to be here.
Glad to be here, okay. And we're glad to have you here. Let's try one more time.
Yeah, I am okay. Glad to be here. There
great,
we go.
Great. We're glad to have you here, too. Sometimes folks don't... or whatever. But before we get into the turnaround aspect of our program today, let's focus a little bit on gangbanging. What attracted you to gangbanging from your perspective?
Just a sense of belonging, a sense of something that was missing out the household itself. You know, I was raised in a variety of different households, so, you know, being an individual going through the system, CSD, you know, I guess it's DHS right now, it's recognized as. So, you know, my father didn't know how to love me at the time, and I say this because he admitted it later on as I matured and went back home.
Mm-hmm. You mean y'all reconciled at some point?
Yeah, when I was about age 14, and when I went back home before I left again or got pulled out again, so.
Did the thought of jail time or even death dissuade you at all from thinking about joining a gang?
No, it was the furthest thing from my mind, because even in a confinement setting, there's going to be the type of love that was missing in my household, that void, you know. Mm-hmm. Someone always wanting to be there for you, be down for you. It doesn't matter if you get in trouble, they still love you the same. There's a form of discipline that's required, you know, a specific code of ethics that even gangs have, just like a family structure. Mm-hmm. So the thought never occurred. It was the farthest thought from my mind, you know, who cared about consequences. And as a child, you really don't.
Mm-hmm. When you say discipline, can you give us an example of the discipline and that you speak of?
Yeah, the form of discipline we received, like if we had to go out there and handle some business on the block, and what I mean by handling business, I guess it speaks for itself, you know, engage in negativity abroad, whether it's shooting, whether it's stabbing, whether it's selling dope, you know, whether it's out there just kicking it with your homeboys and representing that this is our turf. If we didn't represent adequately or the way that we were supposed to, designed by our turf, then, you know, you either get beat up and possibly it could be the end of your life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really interesting. Okay. Were you recruited or what? How did you decide what gang you wanted to be in? What kind of recruitment tools do they use?
Well, you know, if you start hanging around, my brother, you know, was from the turf that I formerly represented, and you know, hanging around him because I had nothing else better to do, mm-hmm. and I still was looking for that description of how to fit the bill of becoming a man and, you know, seeking my own independence. But when you were hanging, if you start hanging around certain individuals long enough, they're not going to want you seeing what they do without being able to trust you. And one way to do that is to, you know, initiate you. So, yeah, I was initiated through formal beatdown is what they called it. At least that's what they attempted to do. You know, I fought back. Yeah, I fought back. And I'm a bit of extremist. So when I got to the point of, you know, somebody got to die today, mm-hmm. They said, enough. All right, he's down, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was at age 14.
Mm-hmm. What kind of, for the benefit of our audience, what kind of child, adolescent is gangbang material? You know what I'm saying? If we was to look at a prototype or be saying, yeah, he's right for joining the gang, what kind of adolescent or what kind of child do you think is gangbang material?
Well, see, that's just it. There is no specific traditional background that stipulates, you know, an individual is going to join a gang, because some people come from, you know, silver spoon fed households where they never had to work for a thing.
Some gang members. So they're not all come from poverty stricken homes.
No, it's not all poverty stricken. And that's when the attention began to be drawn more to trying to rectify this epidemic as far as gangbanging is concerned. There's just a void. Where there's a major cleavage in a household structure, it creates this need and desire to want to go do something else to fill that void. And usually people are drawn to whomever showed them the most attention. In my case, like I said, it was gangs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me maybe ask this question another way. What in your opinion contributes to a person, male or female, joining a gang?
Lack of structure, lack of moral intactness. Like I said, when there's a void in your life, you're gonna go searching for it, be it good or bad. Love, a lack of love in a household where, you know, maybe you have a father who provides financially, but he's bankrupt emotionally. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't step up to the plate. And you go searching for those who will step up to the plate. And maybe for a young girl, a young female, you know, it's the mother and the father's love, you know, being void. Like I say, he's out there working 24/7 and it leaves little time for the household for him to play his role as the head of the house. So it leaves the child wondering, you know, am I a mistake here? Because they see their mother and father complaining about bills or fighting. Might not even be, you know, concerning anything other than their own addiction. But for a child, when they see that, it really disrupts them emotionally, and they begin to take on the responsibility and the credit for the disruption of the household. So fathers and mothers not stepping up to the plate like they should have been.
Mm-hmm. Give us an example of what consists of stepping up to the plate.
Stepping up to the plate. A lot of people put their addiction before their household duties and tasks. Like,
Addiction to drugs.
Yeah, addiction to drugs. Sex addiction. Just the world, the lust of the world. You know, worldly lust. Mm-hmm. They place that before they do taking care of their family. Somewhere along the line, people got, I guess, dismantled of where love should hold. The definition of love. They mm-hmm. they say it, but it's on automatic now. It's not no feeling behind it. So in my household, my father, he was raised by a man who loved him through his fists. So that's the only way he knew how to love. Mm-hmm. That's one of the main reasons I'm able to forgive him. I was able to forgive him a million times. He apologized. And eventually he got it right. Mm-hmm. We are late bloomers because of our what's been indoctrinated us throughout the years. But once we catch on, we catch on. Some of us never do, though, and that's where the problem lies, you know. Mm-hmm. I was able to visit some individuals' households where there was no structure. So even when I went to foster homes where there was structure, it carried very little weight in my life. Mm-hmm. Because I recognized love through, you know, force, through physical force. So. Mm-hmm.
So that looking back on the whole experience of joining a gang and all of the activities that was involved in belonging, as you say,
mm-hmm.
if you had it to do all over again, would you do it recognizing the things that were required in order to maintain a reputation and maintain your standing in the gang?
I would do it all over again, but not the way that I've done it. You know, I mean, now that I have the tools and I'm equipped enough with the tools to be able to voice my opinion verbally, and it's from the mind throughout the mouth and rather than from the mind through the fist. I changed a lot of things. I didn't have the tools. I sought individuals to give me the tools back then, and there were some prominent pillars of many communities trying to come and help assist me, like Rob Richardson, and you know, Roy Rogers, and Sam Pierce. There's a lot of prominent individuals, but I so far gone on my own little concept of how a man should be treated and how a man should become a man. To where I shunned them. So it wasn't like I didn't have any help, but, you know, I was a product of my community. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I would do it all over again. I would gravitate more to those individuals who had to come to me time and time again, because it wasn't just once or 100 times. They had to come to me time and time again to tell me right from wrong. And then they found out the best way to tell me, which was to just continue walking and being an example. So I had to eventually mature and take heed to their lessons.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of time we don't see the females, either gang members or partners of gang members. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that.
There's a variety of different class individuals. Being a gang member isn't a cultural thing. It's not a traditional thing, and it doesn't discriminate on race, sex, creed, any of that. There's a lot of young ladies right now, you know, who are promiscuous, and 9 times out of 10, back in those days, I don't know about now, but back in those days, that's how they were courted in. Some of them, you know, put in work is what we call it, you know, pick up that pistol and make it whistle. But there were some who were just real promiscuous, and that's the way that they got in, man, sleeping around, but you couldn't go outside that turf. And there's some now that, you know, the roles have, seemingly changed. And I'm not ashamed to say it because I see it with my own eyes. Some of these females are more dominant than the male species in this day and age. So
you can say that again.
Yeah, you know how you party back then. You used to have to go up to the car and talk to them and get out. Now it's the other way around now. They'll roll up on you and ask you what you're doing tonight and tell you to hop in. And if you walk, you know, on foot, you could be just going to the store, you know, but.
One of the things that one of the programs that was shown on television talks about a whole culture that exists within the gang in terms of females and females having babies and and initiating the baby into the gang culture. Is that pretty much how it goes?
Well, you know, in some cases, yeah, that's pretty much how it goes. But ignorance breeds ignorance. And I just think it's a lack of education about the reform and about, you know, the specific reason why, I guess, gang violence is spiraling more and more out of control. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, there aren't a lot of poverty-stricken individuals gang-ridden due to their circumstance. But what I am saying is that, you know, now we've come so far along in our time that we don't need to be reliant on ignorance, and a lot of people just choose it. They choose it because they're at the bottom and they're comfortable staying there and just don't want to do better. But I don't think that they have a reason. I think we as a people, because gangs to me is another tribe. It's like adopting the tribal aspect of Africa, because they have different color codes, different tattoos, different you know, war scars that where they're recognized as belonging to a tribe. So I think, you know, to me, gangs they're nothing but another tribe here.
Mm-hmm. How did you pay for the decisions that you made?
Well, I did some time when I was 16.
And that pretty much goes along with the gang?
Yeah, I shot two people on a bus, and, you know, I'm not proud of it. You know, it is what it is. You know, it was a bogus cause I signed up for, and I thought I was representing to the fullest. So, like I said, I was a bit of an extremist. And also, once I wanted to, you know, not really shun the gang, but step back and mature as a man instead of a boy banging in a grown man's body, I found it extremely hard because I created this expectations of my persona, how I should carry myself, how I should be when I run into someone of the opposite gang who I deem to be a rival. Mm-hmm. I couldn't shake the thought of this is not my rival, not this mere reflection of myself. This cannot be my rival. I could not shake that thought. My mind wasn't ready to. So I progressively got worse and worse and worse and committed more crimes, you know, from robbery to assaults, mainly assaults. And at age 22, when I had made up my mind to transition out the gangs and, you know, try to become a more prominent, productive citizen out here in a freer society, I just wasn't able to make the transition fast enough. And I wound up myself in prison. I still carried heat. And I was doing well. I still packed a pistol, though, and I still had an anger problem. So I landed myself 16 and a half years in the penitentiary. I got served 33, 27-year minimum, and that's after getting it down from 66 years. So, and I was just blessed and fortunate enough to get out through a glitch, and the parole board cut my time in half to, you know, from 17 and a half more years I had to serve in my sentence. They told me if I find a different means of being able to communicate, and like I said, learning never stops, that they'll cut me loose. So that's when it really started sinking in. I still got this issue that needs to be dealt with. But when you're raised a certain way and you've been conducting yourself a certain way for so long, it's just hard to shake that pattern.
You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM, It Takes a Village. My name is Shahid. I'm your host, and I have with me today Oz Johnson, / a.k.a. help me out here.
Joe Johnson.
Joe Johnson.
/ Solo.
Solo.
There you
okay.
go.
I wish we had a whole lot more time because there's so many aspects to this that need to be discussed. I heard you once say, I'm gonna get to the turnaround here for just a moment. I heard you once say that now you're banging for God.
Yes, I bang for Jesus, man. I bang for God.
What turned you around?
Seeing other people die in the streets, knowing that, you know, I had signed up for a bogus cause, and finally realizing that, you know, this Crip and Blood, there's no pension in that. There's no pension in that, and nobody wants to do anything for one another. They're selfish instead of selfless. And I've always been, you know, selfless, and I always wanted to give, and I receive so little in return from my so-called, you know, friends, brothers, homeboys, whatever you want to title them.
I know that you're very interested in music. Did that develop during the 16 years?
That developed a little bit before, but every instrument I play now developed within the 16 and a half years that I had spent in confinement.
Well, we want to thank you for taking time out of the schedule today to get your guitar ready and give us a little sense of what you accomplished and what you learned in those 16 years. There's many more questions we'd like to ask you, but I know we're short on time. Mm-hmm. And hopefully maybe you can come back next month for part two, where we talk about what is some of the things that you think that could curb gang violence. Give us from your perspective. But what are we going to listen to? What are we going to listen to now?
Oh, it's just a song I wrote up. You know, in there, when you're in confinement, you think about everything that you're missing out on and what you took for granted. So in my case, naturally, you know, in there, it's a lonely place. So when you're writing somebody, you're vulnerable and you begin to like an individual. And then, you know, you be sister and brother for a while. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it matures into something a little bit more special because you put in that work and that time with that individual. So it's called compatibility.
Okay, let's hear it.
I thought my disposition was to only be your brother, but life so transitioned. Oh, I'm wanting something other than what the original conditional plans consisted of. A different visual, another type of love, yeah. Wanna be your best friend, provide for you the joy you need, searching through your darkness to your inner sense of quality, wanting to be with you, not just wanting to be in you. Expectations will let you down, but the heart only speaks the truth. Why don't we remain foreign to the world? Display love rarely seen, yeah, by boy and girl. What we have, everybody needs to socialize with compatibility. Whoa. There we go.
All right. Arj Johnson.
Yes, sir.
Today, on today's program, Confessions of a Former Gangbanger, The Turnaround. Last question. I really want to get to really, really quickly. What do you think is the hardest thing for the average person to understand about gangbanging? For many of us, how do we understand? What do you think? What do you think is the hardest thing for us to understand?
That it's a form of mental incarceration, and to truly free oneself, even if you're already physically confined, is to liberate yourself mentally. Song says, "Free your mind, and the rest will follow." So if you learn how to do that and work diligently, just gear all your efforts toward obtaining your freedom mentally, I think that you'll be a better person, and you'll find yourself, you know, walking through doors that you thought that would never open for you.
Mm-hmm. When you did 16 years and you came home, mm-hmm. what was the biggest shock? What's the biggest shock when people come out of prison? Because many of our members of the community will have to come back to the community, mm-hmm. Hopefully, eventually. Mm-hmm. What was the biggest shock for you during that time?
Being able to come out and reacclimate because things had changed. Northeast isn't Northeast no more, you know. Mm-hmm. The African-Americans were pushed out to Southeast for whatever reason. And that's politics, so we'll get into that some other time. But mm-hmm. And then the grocery stores, you know, technology had advanced so far beyond my comprehension to where I had to play catch up with trying to learn, you know, just how to work a phone, even just regular flip phones. I was like, what the heck is this? You know, they had mm-hmm. pagers when I went in. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, again, thank you so much for giving us this glimpse of the life that no one wants to look at.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I appreciate being here and being able to at least, you know, skim the surface of what's been going on.
Right, right. And like you say, when you're begging for God and so forth, it's a lot of work to get this information out. And, you know, we really want to thank you for sharing. It's so and so important. You got another song, really, real quickly, maybe?
Let me see. See if I can play some.
Or either just...
Or just play?
Or just play the guitar. Thank you so much.
Stephen was a man who gave God his all. He knew the Lord would keep him from the fall. On the Lord Jesus Christ, oh, Stephen kept his eyes on the preaching of the gospel. He would surely die, yeah. Hold your peace, oh, vengeance is mine. Enemies would bow down in due time. Hold your peace and I'll fight your battles. Victory shall be mine. Victory shall be mine. Victory shall be mine. All mine, yeah.
There you go, my brother.
And thank you so much. I'm Shaheed Hamid for this edition of It Takes a Village. We want to thank you for tuning in, and tune in every first Friday of the month at 11 o'clock for It Takes a Village. Until next time, for Oz Johnson and Shaheed, peace. We out.